Kansas City was anticlimax. Thanks to its proximity to the Whiteman ICBM launch complex, it had gotten plastered during the big war. The silos had attracted swarms of megaton range warheads set for groundburst, which meant fallout and lots of it. It remained one of the hottest hotspots on the North American continent. So much attention had been paid to the missile silos that little had been spared for the rails, in spite of the fact that the town had been a major rail junction. The Russians in charge of drafting the targeting priority plan had probably figured that between the fallout and the near misses, not a lot of traffic was going to be flowing along the lines for a few thousand years anyway. But as the general himself had gleefully pointed out in a loudspeaker address to the troops as they approached the giant hotspot, rails are one of the very hardest things to damage with nukes, or any kind of area effect weapons. They're steel, they're hard, extraordinarily so from the work hardening of having millions of tons pass over them, and they're low to the ground. Anything in a nuke's radius of total destruction, well, they called it that for a reason. The thermal effect of an airburst could melt or warp rails, but for a surprisingly limited range. Blast effects were tricky, but most cases the dynamic overpressure from a blast, of any kind, simply rolled over the rails.
Any fool with a cutting torch and a wag can cut a train line in a matter of hours. But the highest tech, the most powerful weapons ever devised, practically had to score direct hits to target them at all.
Whether most of the crew found the general's joke funny or just incomprehensible was another issue. JB and Leo, in the armory car prepping for the final expedition, on which JB had been ordered to go, thought it was a hoot. But then, they were that way. Nonetheless, the most direct lines from Agog, coming in from the west and southwest, had been cut. How the general knew that, nobody was sure. Leo told JB, though, that the general had spent years in preparation after finding the Great Train, and may have reconnoitered then. After crossing the river, the train circled north and east and came in from almost due north. They left the soft-shelled cars in a siding north of the ruins of the metropolis with most of the troop complement. Only the crews necessary to man the hardpoint-mounted heavy weapons and the train itself accompanied the armored engines and carriages into the city. And a recovery team of 12 men picked especially to fill the 12 rad suits the general had scabbied somewhere. One of these 12 men was a not entirely thrilled JB.
I checked the suits myself.
Leo watched JB scrutinize it as Magog picked its way through what had been the northern suburbs. The crew had rigged a specially designed dozer blade to clear obstructions from the line. It could deal with a lot of rubble, up to a collapsed building, but anything the blade couldn't handle, the rad suit boys would have to go out to play with.
They're good suits, perfect condition.
Still, triple stoop to go into a place where the rads will just knock a man right down dead without even bothering with convulsions and the bloody shits.
Welcome to the army, son.
So how do I get out of this chicken shit outfit?
Die.
JB was also less than enchanted with the weapon he'd been assigned. His friends would have been amazed.
Don't use a flamethrower very often. Never wanted to. One thing I know about them, everybody on the whole battlefield shoots at them. Oh, and one more thing. They explode on impact.
And just who in the name of glowing night shit is going to be shooting at you, JB? Wasn't you just 15 seconds ago bitching and moaning that it's too hot to live without lead long johns?
JB was turning the nozzles in his hand.
Muties, this thing hasn't got mil-spec markings on it. It's got a GE logo. Dark night. What did General Electric make a flame blaster for?
Well, did a lot of contract work for the government. U.S. didn't actually have no flamethrowers as such in their arsenal by the time the big nuke rolled around. Used flame rockets and shit.
The old man nodded to the twin tanks.
This here was probably built for some government group.
Coarse and loud and obnoxious as he was, Leo was a consummate craftsman. As part of his job keeping Magog's weapon systems firing on all barrels, he had studied the train's data libraries almost as extensively as the general had, including the history and purpose for which Magog was built. For the chief armorer and JB, it had been love at first sight. Like many master craftsmen, Leo was deliberately rude to outsiders, so he wouldn't have to deal with them peering over his shoulder, jogging his elbow, and asking triple stoop questions. In person, he was still vulgar, cranky, and obnoxious, but less aggressively so. And of course, the slightest hint of incompetence brought instant thermonuclear retribution down upon the perpetrator's ass. Small chance of that with JB. For one of the few times in his life, the armorer had encountered somebody who was as obsessed with weapons as he was. Each man internally paid the other the highest compliment each could imagine. Leo and JB each knew things the other didn't. JB was as happy as a pig in shit. But he never forgot that he and his companions were prisoners. Slaves, if honored, valued, and well-treated ones. But Leo wasn't the one responsible for JB's plight. As for the rest, well, JB would relax and enjoy it as long as it was inevitable. When it wasn't, he'd be the first to act, and trusted himself to see the opening smart quick.
Were they any good at making flame blasters?
Worked. Testified it myself. Don't forget, GE made miniguns.
Yeah, I did forget that. Double stoop of me.
Yep, tell you what.
Leo went to a keyboard and brought up a display of what the armored train's sensor suite was reading.
Rad count outside's nothing much. Body could go an hour or two unprotected, not even have his hair fall out. Why don't we pop a door and let you try the thing out? It's a good idea, anywho. You gotta be prepared for the kick these babies have. Remember what blasters launches measured per grain, but these are measured in gallons per minute. You let this muzzle kick up vertical on you, boy, that'll ruin everybody's day.
Somebody'll notice from the telltales if we open a door. Hubertus is sick man, if nobody else.
So, what are they gonna do, fire us? One thing to learn about life in this man's army, John Barrymore, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission.
Magog's electric brakes finally brought it to a stop in a rail yard, mostly intact per the general's prediction, next to a river, with the rusted skeletal remains of what looked like an old hotel close on the left, and a private airstrip, its runways heaved and cracked by an explosion of exotic, muty foliage on the far bank. The river itself ran with a weird, iridescent green fluid that put JB in mind of radiator coolant. It bubbled. Three wags, a Hummer, and two pickups were driven out of an armored transport car. It was a measure of how seriously the general took whatever it was they were after that he would sacrifice a prized Hummer. They couldn't spare the decontamination fluid to cleanse the wags, which would be abandoned after the mission. They rolled a few blocks up a hill and east. This part of Kansas City, getting on toward what JB reckoned was downtown, looked as if it had been picked up whole to maybe 1,000 feet and then dropped. The streets were surprisingly clear, though. There hadn't been many buildings in this part of town, multi-storied enough to rubble out seriously. Most of the wags on the street had been burned out early and then worked on by years of chem storms and the real enemy of wags, rain. What they mainly encountered was vaguely wag-shaped mounds of rust and corrosion, so fragile they fell away to red powder at a nudge from the Hummer's reinforced front bumper. They came to what could only be called a compound, surrounded by fences topped with razor tape. Chain link was another thing that survived explosions well, even nuke blasts. Whatever the fence had been treated with, it kept off water and acid better than the wags had. The gate, however, was open. Inside lay several low but massive-looking concrete buildings. They had apparently been designed to survive a nuke near miss, and had. They were overgrown with lush, green-black growth with obscenely fleshy leaves, similar to what had busted up the old airstrip's runway. JB did not like the looks of that in spades. An ambush here might be way unlikely, but the armorer had come across rad-immune muties in his time. The Hummer provided nominal armor protection to its crew, the pick-em-up wags, none at all. To drive in close to the bunkers and bushes was just asking for something the Deathlands was only too eager to provide. Despite his lowly status as the grunt with the flamethrower, JB opened his mouth to comment, but before he could, Captain Helton told them to go inside the gate and park, and informed them that they would go the rest of the way on foot. It was a considerable irony for the armorer to find himself in a squad commanded by the very man who had gunned down his best friend, marooned another, and taken him and his friends captive. Had JB been of a mind to risk tossing away not just his life, but Jack's, Doc's, and Mildred's, this little pleasure trip would no doubt provide ample opportunities to arrange an accident to avenge Ryan. But JB was the where there's life there's hope type. Otherwise, he'd have just gone postal in the first heartbeats of the attack and gotten chilled wasting trained sec men. The time would come to act. It had to.